Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it's November 5th, a Wednesday. And we're looking at a long weekend. Monday is a holiday, so we don't have to come to school. As a matter of fact, I think the building will be closed on Monday, so even if you want to come and look at the display cases, this building will be closed, so you can't get in to look at those. And we're ready to go. So let's look at the schedule real quick. November 5th, we're going to finish up endocrine system today, maybe not get into heart, maybe a little bit. Maybe I can draw some things on the board. And then also today, the afternoon lab has a practicum, and then we're done with practicum number 3, which means that there is only one practicum left in the class. And let's look and see when that is. It's going to be the last week. So the Monday group will get their practicum on Monday, and the Wednesday labs will get their practicums on that Wednesday, but also on that Wednesday will be lecture exam number 4. So the Wednesday labs will get the lecture exam and lab practicum on the same day. That's a lot of test taking, but at least the material is the same. All right, so if you just study a little bit for the lecture exam, then you're studying for the practicum and vice versa, so that should reinforce what you learn. At least that's the goal with lab. And I'll say some more about that in a little bit. There won't be a lab after the practicum, so that will be a short lab for you guys. Okay. Anybody have a question on the schedule? No? That's good. Okay. So the topic for today on the left we see is endocrine system, and maybe we just started talking about the endocrine system a little bit. We said that the endocrine system has glands, and what is the best way to think about glands of the endocrine system? Okay, they synthesize and produce a product and secrete it, right? So it's a gland. What kind of gland is it? It's a ductless gland, right? And a ductless gland really means an endocrine gland, because a gland that has ducts is an exocrine gland, right? So the endocrine system uses ductless glands that secretes a product into the interstitial space. And what's the name of that product that a ductless gland secretes? A hormone, yeah. So how does that hormone get around if there's no duct to move that hormone? Yeah, it gets absorbed by the blood through a capillary, and then the circulatory system delivers it all over the body. But your whole body doesn't respond to that hormone, only certain locations. Based on what? Why do only certain locations respond to that hormone? Because only certain tissues have receptors, right? And the hormone has to bind to a receptor before it will affect the physiology of that target cell or target tissue. All right, so that's some interesting things to know about the endocrine system. They secrete hormones. Hormones travel via the blood, got to bind to a receptor. And then after it binds to a receptor, what happens? It changes something in the cell. It changes the physiology, changes the function of that particular cell. So a hormone is a signaling compound. It directs cells to change their activity. So the endocrine system helps regulate body functions all over the body. So that's the importance of the endocrine system. And you're familiar with another system that does pretty much the same thing, but it works very fast, and that is the nervous system. So endocrine system and nervous system are similar. It's just that the nervous system acts very quickly. The endocrine system regulates relatively slow processes or long-term processes. All right, so what the function is, regulates relatively slow processes, for instance, like growth. And how do you grow? You grow just one day in your life? Many days? Okay, probably you realize it's years. It takes years, right? So the nervous system wouldn't function very well. So the endocrine system is perfect for that. And it also adjusts metabolism day in and day out, long term. Reproductive system, we're reproductive for long periods of our life. And so the endocrine system is used for that. It helps regulate blood chemistry. So, for instance, it helps control the number of red blood cells that are produced in our body. And I think in lab, I mentioned how many red blood cells die in our body every second. Okay? It was like between 1 and 2 million red blood cells. So the endocrine system is important in helping regulate how many red blood cells are produced, and it should exactly match up how many are lost due to just the natural processes of what red blood cells go through. They don't live a very long period of time. And then there are some other hormones responsible for fighting infection, and we call that immune response. The slide on the right shows the location of a number of endocrine glands. And of course, all of these endocrine glands have to have a blood supply going to them, right? Because these endocrine glands don't have ducts. So we see parts of the brain that are actually endocrine glands, like the pineal gland and the hypothalamus, part of the central nervous system, are ductless glands. So your brain is really an endocrine organ, along with the pituitary, that's an endocrine gland, the thyroid, and we see some parathyroid glands embedded in the thyroid. Here is the thymus gland, that's involved with your immune response. The kidney helps regulate your red blood cell production, so it's an endocrine gland. This gland on top of the kidneys, the adrenal gland, secrete a whole bunch of different kinds of compounds. I think you're familiar with epinephrine and norepinephrine from the adrenal medulla, but the superficial parts of the adrenal gland, namely the adrenal cortex, also secretes a number of hormones that we're going to look at. Some of them are steroids. And for instance, some of them can be used for regulating glucose metabolism. Some are used to regulate salt concentration in your body, like sodium and potassium. They come from the adrenal glands. And then we have the gonads over here. Right? Gonads are our primary sexual reproductive structure. It secretes hormones, but it does something else. And this other function is omitted from your notes that I probably want to tell you right now before I forget. So the gonad in the male is a testes, and in the female it's an ovary. The ovary secretes estrogen and progesterone. These are sex hormones that regulate reproductive behaviors or physiology in a woman. And the hormone secreted by the male testes is just testosterone. And the male doesn't have a hormone that would be comparable to progesterone. So females get two hormones, males get only one hormone, namely testosterone. The other function not mentioned in your slides is that these gonads produce sex cells for reproduction. And that's really not part of the endocrine system, part of the reproductive system, but I'll tell you what the sex cells are. The sex cells produced by the testes are what we call sperm, and you're probably aware of that, and the sex cell produced by an ovary is an egg. And those sex cells are basically half of a human, half of the total number of chromosomes that all the other cells in our body has, so that when a sperm fertilizes an egg, then that has the full usual complement of chromosomes, right? So each of those, what we call gametes, should only have half the number of chromosomes because it has to unite with the opposite gamete. All right, so we're going to look at some of these different locations. There are some endocrine glands that are not shown on this diagram. For instance, a really good example would be the heart. All right, the heart is a muscle pump that pumps blood, it produces pressure, but it's also an endocrine gland because it secretes a hormone that helps regulate what the kidney does. And we'll mention that. And the kidneys help regulate blood pressure, and it assists what the heart does. So there has to be communication between the heart and the kidneys. And that's done via a hormone to help regulate blood pressure. Right, so if it's a hormone helping regulate blood pressure, is it for long-term control or short-term control? Is it like, for instance, second to second, like when you stand up from sitting down, or maybe from week to week? Because it's the endocrine system, it regulates relatively slow processes, so it's for long-term regulation of blood pressure, not short-term. You have the nervous system for short-term regulation of blood pressure. Okay, so those are some important functions. Here's a list of endocrine glands that I showed you. Right, we got pituitary, adrenal, pancreas. Oh, I didn't talk about pancreas, thymus, gonads, hypothalamus. We'll talk about all of these. But here is that pancreas. We haven't studied the digestive system. But the pancreas is an interesting gland because part of it is exocrine and another part is endocrine. So you're going to find ducts within the pancreas for its exocrine function, namely that it produces digestive enzymes, and those digestive enzymes then get in a duct and travel to the digestive tract. But the hormones are not secreted into the duct, they're picked up directly by the blood, and those hormones from the pancreas help regulate blood glucose. Anybody familiar with a hormone that helps regulate blood glucose? I'm sure everybody knows. And it is insulin, yeah. And insulin comes from the pancreas. And there's another hormone from the pancreas that helps regulate blood glucose, and that's called glucagon. So both insulin and glucagon come from the pancreas. And when you think of insulin and glucagon, you should think of the autonomic nervous system. How many divisions does the autonomic nervous system have? It's got two. And how would you describe the relationship of those two nervous systems to somebody? They're antagonistic to each other. And that's a beautiful thing because that provides for precise control and balance. And the hormones from the pancreas, namely insulin and glucagon, are antagonistic to each other as well. Right? So you might want to think of insulin and glucagon as like being the biceps brachii and triceps brachii, or the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So that provides for really good control over blood glucose levels in most cases. All right, some other organs. Mentioned the heart, but the digestive tract also secretes hormones to regulate digestive processes. I did mention the kidneys, but they're on this slide right here. And the skin also secretes hormones. So there's a lot of different places in our body that we wouldn't really consider endocrine glands, but they are because they secrete hormones. Most of the glands that we're looking at come from epithelium. They're epithelial tissues. As a matter of fact, all the glands that we've looked at so far, even exocrine glands, we saw they're derived from epithelium. But there are a couple that could be derived from neurons, like the cells of the adrenal medulla are derived from neurons that secrete epinephrine, norepinephrine, some muscle cells, and some other cells in the nervous system. But mostly, they come from epithelium. All right, so here is a hormone. All right, hormone. What the heck does a hormone do once again? It's secreted by an endocrine gland, travels throughout the whole body via the circulatory system. It's got a bind to receptor, and it changes the physiology or changes the function of that cell when it binds to that receptor. So it coordinates the physiology within the whole person, the whole body. In terms of hormones, we can break them down into some classes. Some are made from amino acids, and some are made from cholesterol. Those are going to be steroids. So what is an amino acid a building block of? I don't teach you that in this class, but most people kind of know already. Amino acid is necessary to make a protein. Yeah, so some hormones are proteins, or very small or very short proteins that we call peptides, just a few amino acids, right? And others, I tell you what, and those that are made out of amino acids like to dissolve in water very easily. Steroids, on the other hand, are derived from cholesterol, and that's a lipid, which is another name for a fat. And what can you tell me about a fat or oil and water? Does oil and water mix? They do not, right? So all steroids derived from cholesterol don't like to dissolve in water, and they're going to have some different properties as a result of that. Okay, so those are two main classes of hormones that we're going to become familiar with in this class. All right, so how is secretion of a hormone controlled? And I see there's three different ways that it can be controlled. It can be controlled humorally, neurally, or hormonally. All right, so what do these three terms mean? Well, you got some pretty good slides that show that. In terms of humoral, it means that a hormone is secreted based on the level of some kind of chemical inside your body, for instance, like calcium levels in your blood or glucose levels in your blood. Calcium and glucose are not hormones, they're just chemicals floating around. And when those concentrations increase or decrease, then these other endocrine glands are going to respond to that to make sure that they don't change drastically, because if they change drastically, then that could be a fatal circumstance. So this first case, okay, I see the thyroid gland, kind of a butterfly-shaped organ, and embedded in the thyroid gland are the parathyroid glands. And so what I really want to mention on this slide are the parathyroid glands. I show you the thyroid just to kind of remind you where they are located. They're involved in regulating blood calcium, right? So when blood calcium is low, the parathyroid glands release parathyroid hormone, and parathyroid hormone increases calcium that's in the blood, mostly by, well, two different ways it does that, by helping dissolve some bones, because bones are made out of calcium. Unfortunately, that makes bones weaker when that happens, right? And it also helps the absorption of calcium from the digestive tract, from the food that we eat, those two things. All right, so parathyroid hormone is released based on the concentration of calcium that's in the blood. That's what we call humoral. So calcium would be a humor, would be a substance that's in our body. The second kind, neural stimulus. So if we look at the adrenal medulla right here, I see a nerve going all the way to the adrenal medulla. And you probably know a lot about this nerve already. What nervous system does it belong to? You could probably tell me a couple different things about this nervous system, but what would be one thing you could say? Okay, is it a sensory neuron or is it a motor neuron? Yeah, it's motor. So is it efferent or afferent? It is efferent, so it's an efferent. So the effector organ in this case is going to be the gland, the adrenal medulla. Okay, and what nervous system controls glands? What glands belong to are an effector organ for? For what kind of nervous system? You guys are having some good ideas, but I can't quite hear what you're saying. Okay. It belongs to the, it's an effector organ of the autonomic nervous system, right? Autonomic nervous system is glands are effector organs for the autonomic nervous system. And if this gland right here secretes norepinephrine and norepinephrine, is it a sympathetic nerve or a parasympathetic nerve? Because remember, there's two divisions for the autonomic nervous system. It's a sympathetic nerve. So here's a sympathetic nerve fiber going to the adrenal medulla. And when a nerve impulse reaches the adrenal medulla, that's when the adrenal medulla secretes epinephrine and norepinephrine. It's picked up by a capillary and delivered all over the body. So what's causing the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine is a neuron signal, right? Or an electrical signal from a neuron. So that would be an example of a neuronal or neural stimulus. Right, a nerve impulse causing the release of hormone, right? As opposed to this first case, which was just a level of chemical in the circulatory system. All right, so that's humoral and neural. There's another way it can be controlled. Some endocrine glands are signaled to secrete a hormone based on the level of another hormone that's floating around in the body. That would be an example of hormonal stimulus. When a hormone causes another endocrine gland to secrete a hormone, that's an example of hormonal stimulus. And in particular, here's a really good example. Here is the pituitary gland, and we've tried to find it in lab a number of times. It likes to fall off the brain, but it's right below the hypothalamus. Here's the infundibulum. That's a very weak structure, so pituitary glands are missing from a lot of dissection specimens we have. Even the brain models that we have to a large degree. And we see that the pituitary gland has two different lobes, and in particular, this anterior lobe has endocrine cells that secrete hormones. For instance, there is a hormone secreted from the anterior pituitary that goes to the thyroid that tells the thyroid gland to grow and secrete hormones. There's a hormone from the anterior pituitary that goes to the adrenal cortex that tells the adrenal cortex to secrete some hormones. Right, and there's another hormone that comes from the anterior pituitary that goes to a gonad and tells it to secrete hormones. So in each of these cases right here, what is signaling the thyroid gland and the adrenal cortex and this testes right here to secrete a hormone? It is another hormone from the anterior pituitary. So since those hormones from the anterior pituitary are controlling the release of other hormones from other endocrine glands, that is what we call a hormonal stimulus. Right? So there aren't nerves that go from the anterior pituitary to the thyroid. And there's just what? An endocrine signal. So hormones are signaling compounds that change the physiology of, of their target tissues, right, when that hormone binds to receptor. And there's even another example of hormonal stimulus. And here is the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus synthesizes hormones that it secretes, and where do those hormones have to go to get to their target tissue again? These hormones from the hypothalamus enter the circulatory system. Yeah, it goes to the pituitary. There's not a duct, right, because the hypothalamus is an endocrine gland. It's not an exocrine. So the hormones from the hypothalamus are picked up by the circulatory system, and there's a blood vessel going right through the infundibulum, taking those hormones to the anterior pituitary, which then stimulates the release of hormones that control the thyroid gland and adrenal cortex and the testes. All right, so that would be another example of hormonal stimulus when hypothalamic hormones control what the anterior pituitary is doing. So you're probably really interested now to learn about some specific cases and how they work. These are just three of the general circumstances that we're going to be looking at. So let's look at the pituitary gland first, right, that we see on this particular slide. All right, but I'm going to scoot ahead and look at the pituitary gland. We know where the pituitary gland is located. All right, so here we have a nice frontal bone, parietal, occipital, right? And then here's that sphenoid, indeed. And here's a paranasal sinus, the sphenoid sinus. And here's the cella turcica within the sphenoid bone. And in that depression is the pituitary gland, which is made up of the anterior and posterior pituitary. And that cella turcica is a fossa. What's the function of a fossa, once again? It's holding something, and this one is holding the pituitary gland, right? And we can see the pituitary gland just right below the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus is right below the thalamus, right? So you're familiar with some of these structures. And maybe on this slide, I can see it. I can even see this really delicate piece of tissue that connects the hypothalamus to the pituitary. That is, who knows the name of this little stalk? That is the infundibulum. Yes, no one said peduncolito, but you probably could if I would have known what you were talking about, right? Just a little connection. Okay, so the pituitary gland secretes 9 major kinds of hormones. Oh, here's a really good example, right, of the hypothalamus and pituitary and the cella turcica. Another name for pituitary is hypophysis, right? And here is the infundibulum, and here's the things that you can see, third ventricle around the thalamus and some choroid plexus right in there. Okay. Well, as you see on this slide, the pituitary is composed of 2 main sections. There's an anterior part and a posterior part, right, as well as the infundibulum. The anterior and posterior part are vastly different from each other. The anterior part is derived from epithelium. It's really glandular tissue. But the posterior lobe of the pituitary is really part of the nervous system. It's made of neuronal tissue. Right, but I think you shouldn't be too surprised that a neuron secretes a hormone, right? And so the posterior pituitary secretes something that we might want to call a neurohormone because it's secreted by a neuron. But that signaling compound nonetheless gets distributed to the whole body via the circulatory system. Okay, same thing for the hormones from the anterior lobe. So what do I want you to know about this pituitary? I think what I would like you to know, what is on this word slide, that the anterior pituitary, another name for the anterior pituitary right here is adenohypophysis. Adeno. So when you see this term adeno, you should think of a gland. Right, maybe derived from epithelium. The posterior part is the neurohypophysis, which is really an extension of the central nervous system. Right, so adenohypophysis, glandular tissue, neurohypophysis is from nervous system, nervous tissue. All right, and they secrete different kinds of hormones. And I think we're going to look at the anterior pituitary first. So here is hypothalamus. And here I see some cell bodies, so here is a nucleus within the hypothalamus. And these cell bodies right here have receptors for all kinds of things in the body, like the levels of hormones and a bunch of other parameters. And then they will send electrical impulses pretty close to the infundibulum. And at that axon terminus, they don't release a neurotransmitter, but they release a hormone that gets picked up by this capillary at the base of the hypothalamus, and it travels through a blood vessel to another capillary in the anterior pituitary. You're going to see when we get to the cardiovascular system that usually there is only one capillary as blood is flowing from the heart and then back to the heart. In this particular case, there are two capillary beds back to back, and that's really special. We call that a portal system. So here is a portal system. It's a special delivery system that picks up a hormone from the hypothalamus and delivers it directly where? To the anterior pituitary. So that hormone isn't diluted out by going into the entire circulation. It just gets delivered to the anterior pituitary. And capillaries are the only kinds of blood vessels where things can enter and leave. So there has to be a capillary in the hypothalamus for hormones to enter. There has to be a capillary bed in the anterior pituitary so that those hormones can leave the circulatory system and signal the cells of the anterior pituitary to release their particular hormones. So let's take a look at what hormones are released from the anterior pituitary. Here is a list of them. And we just talk about them in terms of these abbreviations, but TSH stands for thyroid stimulating hormone. So where does TSH go to? What target tissue has receptors for TSH? It's going to be the thyroid gland. Yeah, TSH goes all over, but really only affects the thyroid gland. FSH and LH, right? We combine these two together. FSH is called follicle stimulating hormone. It causes the maturation of an egg cell. It also causes spermatogenesis. So you probably have a pretty good idea of what the target tissue is. It's either going to be an ovary or a testes, or we could say a gonad, right? But it also affects oogenesis as well and ovulation. So these things, FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, and luteinizing hormone, sometimes we call these gonadotropins because they go to a gonad and support gametogenesis, whether spermatogenesis or oogenesis. And it also helps regulate what hormones the ovary and testes secretes. Right, so these are gonadotropins. Adrenal corticotropic hormone goes to the adrenal cortex and causes the release of hormones from the adrenal cortex. Growth hormone goes all over the body. And this is especially important during development because it helps regulate growth, bone growth, muscle growth, growth of the nervous system during development when somebody is growing very rapidly. And PRL stands for prolactin. Prolactin is a hormone that comes from the anterior pituitary. It goes to a breast and it causes the breast to develop glandular tissue, right? And that glandular tissue is actually an exocrine gland, right? And what's the product from a breast? It is milk, right? And that travels through a duct. Prolactin is necessary for the breast to become competent to synthesize and secrete milk, right? And that should happen only when somebody's having a baby, right? But not all the time. And prolactin is important for that. Prolactin doesn't regulate secretion of milk from the breast, but prolactin is necessary so that the breast can produce and secrete milk if there is another hormone available. All right, so those are some of the target tissues for these hormones. All right, so let's look at the word slide right here. Growth hormone. Sometimes we call that somatotropic hormone. Somato just refers to body. Right, tropic means that it helps growth. It's like a feeding kind of hormone. Right, so this helps the body grow. Somatotropic stimulates body growth. Thyroid stimulating hormone goes to the thyroid glands and signals the thyroid to secrete thyroid hormone. And ACTH goes to the adrenal cortex and it signals the secretion of hormones that help us cope with stress. And also helps regulate salt concentration in our body. Melanocyte-stimulating hormone, MSH, in humans, we think that MSH functions in appetite suppression, but we're not exactly sure what it does. And then what are the two gonadotropins? FSH, follicle-stimulating hormone. A follicle is a place inside an ovary that produces an egg necessary for fertilization. Right? And so it's important both in the male and female, because a female produces eggs, but a male produces sperm. These things are what we call gametes, and FSH is necessary for that to happen. The other function of gonads is to secrete hormones, male testosterone, female estrogen and progesterone, and LH, right, is very important because that signals the male to secrete testosterone, right, to produce and secrete testosterone. In the female, LH has a little bit different purpose, right? It certainly helps in regulating levels of hormones secreted by the ovary, but its main purpose is that it signals or triggers ovulation. It triggers when an egg is expelled from an ovary so that it can be fertilized. So when we get to reproductive system, we're going to look at some of these hormones in some detail. Okay, prolactin, again, we said, is glandular tissue of the breast, and it just stimulates the glandular tissue to become competent to produce milk so that it can be secreted at the proper time. All right, so here, these are all hormones from the anterior pituitary, and they're under hormonal control. So there are other hormones that control their release, and those hormones come from the hypothalamus via the, let's go back a slide, via the blood vessel that we call a portal blood vessel. Portal blood vessel is one that's in between two capillaries. And we also like to name this portal vessel by where the blood is coming from and where the blood is going. And so where is this blood coming from? It's picking up hormones from the hypothalamus. So we call this the hypothalamo. We've got to put an O in there. All right? Hypophyseal, because another name for pituitary is hypophysis. So hypothalamo, hypophyseal, portal blood vessel brings hormones from the hypothalamus to the pituitary gland to cause the release of these other hormones. Okay, so that seems pretty complicated, but it's not too bad. So let me just maybe draw something on the board really quick. So you just have to look at the end of chapter questions and online questions to see what kinds of hormones from the hypothalamus you should be familiar with. But I'm going to give you the name of just a general scheme of how things work. So what does a hypothalamus look like? Hypothalamus kind of looks like maybe like this. All right, so here is hypothalamus, and pituitary kind of looks like that. So let's draw some hormones that are secreted by the pituitary. As a matter of fact, let's put in the posterior pituitary. We're not interested in that right now. Anterior pituitary, give me the name of a hormone that the anterior pituitary secretes. Prolactin. Okay, so we're just going to say PRL from the what? Anterior pituitary. So what signals the anterior pituitary to release prolactin? It's a hormone from the hypothalamus, and we're going to call that hormone PRL-RH, releasing hormone. And it goes through that portal blood vessel into the anterior pituitary, causes release of prolactin. Okay, so all of the hormones from the hypothalamus are going to be called releasing hormones, and then also the name corresponding to what hormone it controls from the anterior pituitary. Sometimes it's called an RH, sometimes it's called a releasing factor, depending on what book you pick up. But releasing hormone and releasing factor are exactly the same thing. And where does a releasing factor or a releasing hormone come from? The hypothalamus, and it controls what the pituitary is doing because the pituitary has cells with receptors for that particular hormone. What's another one? It's another hormone. How about this one might be a little bit confusing. What about FSH?
all right, from the anterior pituitary. That's going to go to a gonad. There is another one, right, that we call LH. We kind of group these together because they both work on a gonad. So since they both work on a gonad, sometimes we call these things gonadotropins. All right, so where should I write that? Gonadotropins. Gonadotropin. So you got two kinds. One is FSH. Two will be LH. All right, so these are gonadotropins. So there has to be a releasing hormone or releasing factor, right, that goes from the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary. So here it is right here. And we're going to call that gonadotropin releasing hormone, GnRH. That's going to cause the release of both FSH and LH. But you see something that's kind of common so far is what? RH. RH. So they're all just named by the hormone, right, and then RH. How about another one more, just for fun? How about what else? What's another hormone that the anterior pituitary secretes, right? Anterior pituitary. What about thyroid-stimulating hormone that goes to the thyroid gland, causes it to release thyroid hormone? So what's the name of the hormone from the hypothalamus that causes the anterior pituitary to release TSH? It is going to be called, and I'm going to loop it around like this, right there. This is what? TSH-RH, like so. Okay. So that's just a real convenient way of naming these things. Sometimes the book maybe changes that nomenclature a little bit, but this is the way I would like for you to think about it. Okay? Okay, so the hormones from the hypothalamus are releasing hormones, right, that control the release of hormones from the anterior pituitary. And how do these hormones from the hypothalamus get to the anterior pituitary? It is via a... what? Blood vessel. Right? Because those things are hormones. Blood vessel. And you should remember the name of that blood vessel. It's a portal blood vessel. Hypothalamo hypophyseal portal blood vessel. Start with the hypothalamus and then go to the pituitary. Hypothalamo hypophyseal portal blood vessel. All right, so that's a lot about the anterior pituitary. But are we done with the pituitary? Because we still have to talk about the posterior pituitary right here. Okay, let me turn some of these lights back off once again. Okay, posterior pituitary is a whole lot simpler. So here is the posterior pituitary. Let's go to the next slide. Notice that there isn't a portal blood vessel going through the infundibulum to the posterior pituitary because the posterior pituitary is neuronal tissue. It's not glandular tissue like the anterior. So this thing is a tract. What is a tract once again? Where do you find tracts? Central nervous system. And is it nerve cell bodies and dendrites or what the heck is a tract? A tract is white matter. And white matter is what? Myelinated axons. Axons are just taking nerve impulses from one location to another location very rapidly down to the axon terminus. And so here are some nuclei in the hypothalamus, and we can see they're named supraoptic nucleus, which means what? Right on top of the optic chiasma. Paraventricular nucleus is on the walls of the hypothalamus above the supraoptic nucleus. And remember, a nucleus is gray matter in the central nervous system. And gray matter is what? Dendrites and cell bodies that are not myelinated. And look what we see here, nerve cell bodies and dendrites. And you should know they're not myelinated. And then they send electrical signals into their axons. Their axons are myelinated, and that becomes a tract that goes from the hypothalamus to the posterior pituitary. That tract has a name similar to the portal blood vessel. It is the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract, or hypothalamic hypophyseal tract, because what is this hypophyseal referring to? What's the hypothesis? Hypothalamus is here, but hypothesis is another name for
or the pituitary gland, right? So hypothalamic hypophyseal tract is just a tract that takes information from the hypothalamus to the posterior pituitary, or the hypophysis. Now, when a nerve impulse reaches the axon terminus, right, it's going to release in the usual way that we think of a neuron. What does a neuron usually release when a nerve impulse reaches the axon terminus? What does it usually release? It releases a chemical, right, that goes across the synapse. What is the name of that chemical that goes across the synapse to stimulate a postsynaptic cell? A neurotransmitter, right? Yeah, it's usually a neurotransmitter because these are neurons. But in this particular case, this is not a synapse. It's not going to stimulate a postsynaptic cell, right? That neurotransmitter is really a hormone because it gets picked up by a capillary bed and delivered everywhere in the body. So these two things, we could consider them neurotransmitters because they come from a neuron, but because they get picked up by the blood, we can consider them a hormone as well. But what's probably the best way to think about these two? These are neurohormones because they come from a neuron. And there's only two, oxytocin and antidiuretic hormone. All right, let's see, I have these on the slide. Yeah, I sure do. All right, so let's talk about oxytocin. So there's only two, as opposed to all of the ones in the anterior pituitary. Oxytocin, you might know, is in a pharmaceutical name, it's called Pitocin, and it stimulates contraction of smooth muscle. It's a very powerful stimulator of smooth muscle, causing it to contract. So for instance, during parturition, oxytocin from the posterior pituitary causes the uterus to contract. Right, and you can probably tell me how it contracts vigorously. Right, so it causes contraction of smooth muscle, but not just of the uterus, but it can also cause contraction of smooth muscle around the glandular tissue of the breast. So when oxytocin is secreted, guess what happens to milk that's in the breast? It is secreted. Right, so prolactin is necessary to make sure that the glandular tissue is competent, that can actually synthesize milk. But oxytocin is necessary because that's what causes ejection of milk, or what we call the milk letdown reflex. All right, so in order to nurse an infant, a mother would need prolactin as well as oxytocin, because oxytocin, powerful smooth muscle stimulant. Antidiuretic hormone doesn't function in reproductive function at all. But what is a diuretic? Anybody have a sense of what a diuretic does? Yeah, it makes you pee, right? It makes you lose water, right? It makes you lose electrolytes. Antidiuretic hormone, on the other hand, helps you conserve water in your body, right? So when you're dehydrated, antidiuretic hormone helps you maintain water so that you don't lose too much, right? So antidiuretic hormone is necessary for you to preserve water in circumstances when you're running low on water. Okay, so antidiuretic hormone, so that's important for helping regulate blood pressure as well. Because if you were to lose a lot of water, your blood pressure would drop, and then you wouldn't have blood flowing properly through your circulatory system. All right, so only these two hormones right here, oxytocin and antidiuretic hormone. Later on, you might know another name for antidiuretic hormone. It's called vasopressin. Vaso stands for blood vessel, and pressin means that it helps support blood pressure. It has a positive influence on blood pressure, vasopressin. All right, so that's it for the pituitary. So my goodness, what do you got to know about this pituitary? Well, it's an endocrine gland, right? Secretes hormones. How many different parts make up the pituitary? Two. Yeah, I want you to know two. Do you remember what the names are of the two parts? Anterior and posterior. What's another name for anterior? Because it's made of glandular tissue. It is the adenohypophysis, right? And the posterior, another name for posterior is neurohypophysis, right. So just to make sure, let me just check to see if you understand what this adeno is. Let's just say that somebody has an adenocarcinoma. That's a cancer. Where is that cancer coming from? Is it coming from bone? Is it coming from muscle? Is it coming from nervous system? Adenocarcinoma. It's coming from what kind of tissue? Glandular tissue, right? Glandular tissue. Adenocarcinoma, from some kind of glandular tissue in your body. Different kinds of adenocarcinomas. Okay. All right, so adenohypothesis is glandular tissue. The neurohypothesis, of course, is from nervous system. And you can see that it just has axons from the hypothalamus moving right down into the posterior pituitary. Okay. Next endocrine gland we're going to look at is the thyroid gland. And we haven't looked at any of these other structures yet. Oh, we've looked at the hyoid bone, right? So we kind of know where that is. Point to your hyoid bone, but don't break it, right? Where's your hyoid? Yeah, it's up here underneath, inside your mandible, right? That's your thyroid gland, that's your hyoid bone. And then you have this cartilage sticking out right there. We call that Adam's apple, but it's also called the thyroid cartilage in anatomy, because right underneath it is the thyroid gland, right? And I'm not sure anybody can feel their thyroid gland, maybe a little bit. Probably if you push it real hard, it might secrete some thyroid hormone, so don't push it too hard. Okay, you have already done that. Oh, well. All right, so here's the thyroid gland. You see that has two lobes. They're connected together. Kind of looks like a butterfly. And it secretes thyroid hormone. And there are two kinds of thyroid hormones. In order to be a competent thyroid hormone, it's got to have an element attached to it, and that element is iodine. So thyroid hormone has iodine. We can't make iodine in our body, just like we can't make iron, we can't make calcium. We have to have a dietary source for iron. One of the hormones that the thyroid gland secretes has four iodine atoms attached to it, and that's what we're going to call T4. Another hormone has three iodines attached to it. We're going to call that T3. T4 and T3 are exactly the same, except one has an additional iodine atom on it. That's really the only difference. They're very much the same. T3 and T4, if we think of these together, that's what thyroid hormone is. So TH, or thyroid hormone, is all of the T3 and all of the T4 that's in our body. Okay. And iodine is necessary to make a competent hormone. So here we see a picture of, or a nice histology slide of the thyroid gland. We can see some of these spherical structures. We're going to call these follicles, right? And the follicles are something that makes thyroid hormone and secretes thyroid hormone. And then there are cells that are outside of the follicles, in between follicles. So we call these the parafollicular cells. They don't make up a follicle. So a follicle is just one layer, just a simple layer of cells. Here's the next one, another simple layer of cells. But this region right here has a whole bunch of cells. These are what we call parafollicular. They don't secrete thyroid hormone. They secrete calcitonin. So thyroid gland is kind of complicated, secretes thyroid hormone and calcitonin. And calcitonin has an effect on an ion in your body, an electrolyte. Tell me what electrolyte that is. Calcium, yeah. So it helps regulate calcium. And you know that's going to be really important. So there are two hormones that help regulate calcium levels in our blood. One increases blood calcium and the other decreases blood calcium, right? And what calcitonin does, it helps decrease blood calcium when it's high by helping calcium deposition into bones. So it helps make bones grow very nice and strong, right? And that comes from the thyroid gland. So when calcium levels in the blood are high, calcitonin is released to help reduce that calcium, but that calcium goes into your bone for storage. If we turn the thyroid gland around, can I turn it around? I can't. Oh yeah, if we turn it around, look at the posterior thyroid gland. I see it has a couple little nodules right here, right? And these are the parathyroid glands, right? Para means on either side of the thyroid gland, and these are involved with regulating blood calcium levels, right? But it's going to be antagonistic to calcitonin. So we said that calcitonin decreases the concentration of calcium in the blood, and The hormone from the parathyroid glands is called parathyroid hormone. Guess what its function is if it's antagonistic to calcitonin? It increases blood calcium levels. All right, well, how does it increase blood calcium levels? One way you will like and another way you won't like. One way that you like is that it helps the absorption of calcium from our digestive tract and puts it in our blood. That's really good. But another action is that it goes to bone and it takes calcium out of bone to put in your blood. And what happens to bone when they're decalcified, when they lose calcium? Yeah, they get brittle. And that can be a very clinically important condition, pathological condition that you know, and it's called, what's it called? Osteoporosis. Okay, that happens as we get older. And so what's involved with that process? Parathyroid hormone and calcitonin are out of balance. And that's one reason, but the other reason is that you need calcium in so many other important areas of your body, like for muscle contraction and for synaptic transmission, releasing neurotransmitter and sending neurotransmitter across the synapse. Calcium is very important, as well as bones. So if you had a choice of having proper blood calcium levels, okay, to support nerve conduction, to support your nervous system and muscle contraction, or to have calcium in bones, where would you put calcium if it was your choice? To make nerves and muscle function properly or to have strong bones? Okay? What muscle is really important that you're using right now? Like your diaphragm needs calcium to contract. So without calcium, you can't breathe. What's more important, breathing or having strong bones? Yeah, breathing is much more important. You've made that decision. Your body makes that same decision too. Right, and we just don't have enough calcium in our bodies as we get older to maintain strong bones and proper function of muscles and nervous system at the same time. But you don't have to be terribly worried, because what can you do to help yourself to maintain calcium in your body and to make bones strong? It's the whole reason why people really hate this class. There are two things that you do. Did we mention this before? I'm sure maybe I mentioned this. What are two things to help protect your bones or help protect you from osteoporosis? It is diet and exercise. Yeah, diet and exercise. Remember, bone is a living tissue. When it's stressed, it responds to that stress by getting bigger and stronger, right? Just like a muscle. If you were to contract this muscle, if I walked around all day with a 10-pound weight and I contracted my biceps all day long, what would happen to that biceps? Yeah, it'd be like Arnold's bicep. I couldn't even fit it in this shirt, right? So it responds by getting bigger and stronger. But if you put stress on a bone, guess what will happen to it? It will get bigger and stronger too. And it will then be a reservoir for more calcium. So exercise is important. But remember, you can't make calcium. You have to have a dietary source. That's where diet comes into play. You have to have a diet that contains calcium. But in order for you to absorb calcium, you need a vitamin. Anybody know what kind of vitamin you need? It is vitamin D, as in dog. D as in dog. Okay. And so you have to have that in your diet as well. So vitamin D and calcium in your diet. But that won't help you if you don't exercise. So exercise is important as well. I'm so glad I don't see anybody leaving class. That's good. Because nobody likes to hear that, but that's the truth. Okay, so that's the thyroid gland. And parathyroid glands are all grouped together, and they secrete three hormones, thyroid hormone, parathyroid hormone, and calcitonin. But probably you should remember that thyroid hormone is made up of both T3 and T4, and probably the important thing to know about that, the 3 and 4 refer to the iodine atom that's necessary. Right? And sometimes iodine is really hard to have in your diet. In the United States, it's pretty easy. Where do you get all of your iodine from in the United States? From table salt. Yeah, table salt is laced with iodine, so that supports proper thyroid function in our bodies. Okay. All right, so that's thyroid gland. What's another one that we want to look at? Oh, here is the kidney. Right above the kidney is the adrenal gland. We're familiar with the medulla, right? That secretes epinephrine and norepinephrine when it receives impulse from a sympathetic nerve, but now we're interested in the adrenal cortex. So here is the adrenal cortex, here's the adrenal medulla. You can see that it has layers as well. The cortex all by itself has layers, and I don't think I'm going to ask you much about these different layers right here, unless there's an end of chapter question, right, or an online question, practice question, and a study guide. Okay, but you should just be aware of these different layers. Like there is a fibrous capsule over the whole adrenal cortex, which I see here. Then there's not a very thick zona glomerulosa and a zona fasciculata, zona reticularis. They produce different kinds of hormones, which we see right on the other side of the slide. Aldosterone is one hormone. Cortisol is another. Right, and then here is the adrenal medulla. You're familiar with epinephrine and norepinephrine. Aldosterone belongs to a class of hormones. Hopefully I have it on the slide right here. A class of hormones, oh nice, which we call mineralocorticoids. Mineralo. And so it helps regulate the concentration of various minerals in your body, in particular sodium and potassium. Those are important electrolytes that control the function of, I would say, just about every cell in your body. Let's just say every cell in your body. And since these are ions, they have an electrical charge, and since they have an electrical charge, they help regulate the electrical properties of your body, which are super important. All right, so aldosterone, a mineralocorticoid, and it helps, well, in one way, it helps regulate blood pressure. Right, but it also regulates the levels of sodium and potassium in your body. Cortisol, on the other hand, is not a mineralocorticoid. We call that a glucocorticoid. And a glucocorticoid helps regulate blood glucose concentration. Right, so it has a tendency to increase blood glucose. And cortisol is secreted as a response to stress. So under stressful situations, then your blood glucose level increases. So you can see under stressful situations that exacerbates diabetes, mellitus, because cortisol increases blood glucose. Right, so cortisol helps deal with stressful body, stressful conditions that you're just experiencing. Those hormones come from the adrenal cortex. And then one more, and that is androgens. Like testosterone are secreted by the adrenal cortex. So androgens not only are secreted by a testes, which is a male gonad, but also from the adrenal cortex. And who has an adrenal cortex? Males, females, or both? Yeah, everybody has an adrenal cortex. So everybody has this male sex steroid being secreted in their body, both males and females, right? And we think this helps support aggressive behavior and also sex drive in individuals. Right? So both males and females exhibit aggressive behavior and sex drive. Of course, that's important for perpetuation of the species. But if you were to pick one gender or one sex as being aggressive, more aggressive than another, would it be males or females? Would it be males or females? I only heard males. How is that possible? That can't possibly be true. And you all know that's not true, right? Females are way more aggressive in the sense of, what, protecting their offspring, right? In terms of aggressive behavior, I've never seen anything exhibited like that in a male person, right? So I'm sure you agree with me. Females are much more aggressive, at least in that response. Okay. So those are some hormones from the adrenal cortex. And you sort of have a sense of where that adrenal gland is now. You'll become more familiar with that as the course goes on. Okay. All right, but don't forget, the adrenal gland has both the cortex and the medulla, right? So, and the medulla releases epinephrine, norepinephrine. The cortex releases mineralocorticoids, glucocorticoids, and androgens, male sex hormone. Pineal gland. Ooh, I don't think I have a picture of the pineal gland very well. I don't. That's not pineal. I'll talk about that in a little bit, I think. pineal gland. In lab, we know where it is, right? Another name, yeah, another name for pineal gland is epithalamus, which means on top of the thalamus. I think everybody's pretty familiar with where the thalamus is, and the pineal gland sits pretty much right on top of it. So it's on the roof of the diencephalon. It's kind of shaped like a pine cone. Take a look at that in lab. It secretes melatonin, and we think melatonin helps regulate circadian rhythms. Circadian rhythms have to do with things that you do on a daily cycle, like sleep at night, get up during the day, or sleep during the day, get up at night, depending on a person's particular circadian rhythm. But there are other things that happen according to that cycle, like reproductive behaviors and reproductive behavior and hormone profiles. Melatonin. What else? I was going to say one other thing. I forgot. What we think melatonin also helps regulate, not in a daily sense, but kind of in a rhythmic sense in your lifespan. It helps regulate the onset of puberty. Right. So when the pineal gland secretes melatonin, right, that suppresses the onset of puberty. And then as the pineal gland regresses as we get older, it calcifies to some degree, it turns into bone, and when that happens, it stops secreting melatonin, and that's when a person goes through puberty, when melatonin starts to decrease. Okay, pancreas. Here we have pancreas. We mentioned that it secretes hormones that regulate blood glucose levels, namely insulin and glucagon. Okay, that's the endocrine part of the pancreas. And, do I have a picture of pancreas? A nice histological picture. Let me take a look really fast to see if I have anything about the pancreas. Ah, nice. Okay. So the pancreas has these spherical structures, these follicular structures, and then it has cells between the follicles as well. Right? And so somebody called these like little islands between these little follicles, and they're called islets. And islets have a couple different kinds of cells. There are alpha cells and beta cells, and these islets are spaces between these follicles. And the alpha cells secrete glucagon, and the beta cells secrete insulin. All right, so remember, insulin, what's the function of insulin? Anybody remember I don't think I told you, but it's fairly common information. It works on blood glucose. What does it do to blood glucose? It decreases blood glucose. So for instance, somebody that's a diabetic, one reason might be because their body doesn't secrete insulin. So when would somebody give themselves a shot of insulin? When they're fasting or right when they're having a meal or right after, if it's going to decrease blood glucose? It's after a meal when glucose is entering their body from their digestive tract, right? So you don't ever want to have a shot of insulin when you're in a fasted state because you don't have any glucose to replace the glucose that is leaving the blood and entering cells, right? So insulin decreases blood glucose when it's high. Glucagon has the opposite effect. Glucagon increases blood glucose when it's low. And when is blood glucose going to decrease? When you're in a fasted state or a fed state? When is glucose going to decrease all by itself? Fed or fasting? Yeah, when you're fasting, when glucose doesn't leave the digestive tract and enter the blood because there's no glucose in your digestive tract to be absorbed. All right, so these two hormones are necessary to help regulate blood glucose when somebody's fasting or when somebody is eating. And it comes from cells, alpha and beta cells, in these islets of Langerhans, which are between these follicles within the pancreas. And since it's an endocrine function, right, these hormones don't need a duct. They don't need a pancreatic duct to get to wherever they're going. They just get picked up by the blood and transported everywhere. Thymus gland. Thymus gland is in that cavity between your lungs. All right, remember, the lungs are in the pleural cavities. What's the name of that cavity that's in between the pleural cavities, the right and left pleural cavity? It's a really fancy name, right? Mediastinum. So the thymus gland is in the mediastinum, right? Here it says anterior thorax, important immune system function, and it's the site where a certain kind of lymphocyte, you had to look at some lymphocytes in lab, and remember, a lymphocyte is a white blood cell that helps fight infection. There are a couple different kinds. This one is a T lymphocyte because it needs to go to the thymus gland to gain competency or to gain function. And what the T cell is a contact killer. It's a white blood cell. When it bumps into a bacteria, it actually has to touch the bacteria, then it will bind to it and will cause the bacteria to explode. We call that lysis. And then, of course, the bacteria can't be infectious anymore when that happens. So a T cell or a T lymphocyte is a contact killer. There are other kinds of lymphocytes that produce antibodies, which are chemical compounds that can kill bacteria. Right, but that lymphocyte doesn't have to touch the bacteria itself. A B lymphocyte just produces compounds that can kill bacteria, but a T lymphocyte actually has to bump into that bacteria to kill it. And those lymphocytes have to migrate to the thymus gland to gain competency. Let's see what else. We have gonads. All right, well, we've got two different kinds, right, male and female. Female, down over here, ovaries. Ovaries secrete estrogen and progesterone. Estrogen maintains secondary sex characteristics. Right? Progesterone helps prepare the uterus for pregnancy and helps maintain pregnancy. What's another name for pregnancy? Anybody know another name for when somebody is pregnant? Or that what is that period of time called when somebody is pregnant? It's called, I think I heard it, gestation. That's right, gestation. And so that's really what progesterone means. It just got shortened. What progesterone really is progestational hormone. Progestational. So that has to be high, right before implantation, and it has to remain high during pregnancy. Right, so it helps maintain the uterus, maintain that pregnant condition. Estrogen, when we get to reproductive system, we'll see what it does, but it's necessary for breast development, right? It's also necessary for maturation of a follicle, just along with FSH and LH. The male gonad, or testes, is, in terms of the endocrine system, only secretes testosterone, but no female sex hormones. So you ladies should be really sensitive to that fact, because you have male sex hormones and female sex hormones. Us guys only have male sex hormones. So we're missing out on that. Okay, so the interstitial cells secrete androgens in the male. And one example of an androgen is testosterone that promotes spermatogenesis, or the formation of male gamete. And it also maintains secondary sex characteristics. So what are some secondary male sex characteristics? What are some ways males are different than females? Facial hair, that's right. More hair all over the body, but not only more, but coarser, right? Thicker hair. What else are some secondary sex characteristics? Bigger muscles, that's right. Androgens make bigger skeletal muscles. As a result, some people actually take exogenous androgens to make their skeletal muscles bigger and stronger. Female athletes do that and male athletes do that, but that's really messing with Mother Nature when you do that. Okay, what's another characteristic? Bigger muscles, more hair, thicker hair, bigger, stronger bones. And that's why males are protected to a larger degree from osteoporosis, because they have bigger bones. They can afford to lose more calcium as we get older. Right? So males can get osteoporosis, right? But they're a little bit more protected. So bigger, stronger bones. Oh, the larynx, right? Part of the airway that we use for breathing, but also vocalizing, is bigger and coarser, which means that their voice is lower in tone, typically. All right, so those are all secondary male sex characteristics. All right, so that's it for endocrine system. Okay, think of some questions maybe you could ask me next time. But I kind of whipped through this lecture so we can more or less get back on schedule. Okay. Sign-in sheet is going around. So this hypothalamus and pituitary is really important for you guys to know, and don't forget, because they'll use it in physiology a lot. So spend a lot of time, become familiar with that.